Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Off Topic, Hot Topic, a bonus episode of the Hunting Seasons podcast. I'm Broderick Gordis.
I'm Paul Mitzi.
And I'm Liam Gordis.
Six seasons in a movie!
Off Topic, Hot Topic.
That's whatever you were talking about for you.
In case you don't know, Off Topic, Hot Topic is where we talk about the headlines of the TV and entertainment world and discuss the stuff we've been watching, reading, playing, and generally consuming. You should also know that we'd love getting topic suggestions from our listeners. So if you'd like to contribute a question, topic, or story to Off Topic, Hot Topic, you can do so by emailing us at contact@huntingseasonspodcast.com or tweeting us at huntingscast. Before we get to the headlines, though, how are you boys both doing? How are you doing, Paul? How are you doing, Liam?
Yeah, fantastic. Good. Back from my trip through the US. So finally,
rub it in.
My body clock's finally adjusted back to Australia, so I can sleep again, which is nice.
How much weight did you put on eating American food?
Like a lot, a ridiculous amount. I'm back on a diet this week.
Means you did it right.
But yeah, I did a week-long cruise where it was buffets for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and I literally ate until I was sick every meal. So
That's not generally well advised.
I mean, after like, how long was that? 2 weeks?
That was a week. The cruise was a week.
I mean, after the first 3 days, you probably stopped trying to eat until you're sick, right?
Well,
got to get your money's worth.
Yeah, I needed to get my money's worth.
Any highlights from the trip? Anything that particularly stood out?
I got to see the New York Symphony Orchestra play all the all the music from the Studio Ghibli movies.
All the music. That must have been a long fucking concert.
That was a week. Actually, he was sick.
They played a selection from all the Miyazaki, specifically the Miyazaki films. Obviously, like the real composer was there conducting them, and that was amazing. I pretty much just cried for 2 hours straight watching that. It was amazing.
What is your favorite Miyazaki film? Just of interest.
Howl's Moving Castle.
Agreed.
Yeah. Just on a visual level, the story. And probably a close second would be Laputa. I really love Laputa.
Very cool. Liam, have you been doing any traveling?
Traveling? I've been traveling to and from my house to my work.
Oh, great.
That's about it. Yeah. It's been, look. I eat until I feel sick.
Don't even need a buffet.
Don't even need a buffet.
All right.
There's a KFC between here and there. That's basically it.
That's your buffet.
Let's get to some news, starting with the major headline. I really don't have the specifics of this written down, but let's just say a fucking shit ton went down with Warner Brothers Discovery since that merger. And HBO, of all places, seems to have really suffered the most, HBO Max. So, Paul, you're a bit more across this than I am. Break it down for me. What are the major headlines here?
Another company, Discovery, has bought HBO and Warner Brothers, and they've been doing some pretty major cost-saving measures. Probably the most controversial of that is scrapping movies that have already been completed and just refusing to ever release them.
Batgirl, is it?
Batgirl's the major one,
So the two major ones were Batgirl and the new Scooby-Doo movie. Mm-hmm. But I think the Batgirl one's the one that's really upset people. It was going to have Michael Keaton as Batman in it, and now we don't get to see that until...
And Brendan Fraser playing the villain, I believe, who is currently trying to make a comeback into, like, Hollywood.
I think this week, The Whale got, like,
a 12-minute standing ovation or something like that.
Yeah. Honestly, apparently, the film's not great, but he is amazing in it.
Okay, right.
One of my favorite things in the world is watching videos of Brendan Fraser break down because of the appreciation he's finally getting from people in the world. Yeah. It is beautiful. It's like he's clearly, there's been a big gap between the mummies and now.
Yeah. And don't forget George of the Jungle.
Yeah, well, George the Jungle before the mummy. But anyway. And yeah, it's beautiful to see that people are actually appreciating him, and he's like, shit, he can't hold it in, and it's amazing.
Well, he got,
yeah.
I was like, I'm glad he's been appreciated.
Yeah, exactly. It's stupid.
So basically they're saying that it's taking the tax write-off is going to be better financially for them than actually releasing the film.
Mm.
And now...
Which I think is insane if Michael Keaton... Like, okay, you want to talk about, you know, all the ideas about why people would be interested in watching a Batgirl film, fine. What, you know, this, that, whatever the thing is that you're interested in. Literally just Michael Keaton playing Bruce Wayne again is Absolutely. Surely enough to release this movie. They get people to go, I kind of need to check that out because he's doing that again.
Yeah, and apparently
he's gone through his own renaissance. Like he's done what Brendan Fraser's doing right now.
The Keatonaissance.
And apparently the test screenings had been going really well. Like people have been enjoying the film, but no one will ever get to watch it. So
fucking bullshit.
Surely they release it. That's
well.
Right.
So what happened was the directors didn't find out about the news of their film being scrapped until they saw the headlines. Then they went into the server to try to make a backup, and they had already been locked out.
Mm-hmm.
So even the people involved in the film have no access to the footage.
They did show it on the lot or something. They showed like they had like a final screening of it for people that were involved. I heard.
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
That they did a screening for the people involved.
The thing is, you can't have a tax write-off and then release the movie. It's like then you would. You would have to financially recoup that somehow, basically, or pay that back. Like, if they are going to scrap it, it has to remain scrapped right now. Yeah. The one thing I saw was, like, someone had won a competition or something like that to be in the movie and, like, was really excited about it. Might have even been, like, one of those Make-A-Wish sort of things. Yeah. And, like, the parents are like, they took photos and stuff. They promised they'd get them to us. Is that going to happen now? Like, are we ever going to see this person, like, this stuff? It's, like, it's not just no one's going to see this movie. It's all the people who fucking made this movie, all the stuff, the work that went into it, the stories around it, that just there's nothing to show for it anymore. It sucks. Yeah.
And it was going to be like a Latinx actress playing Batgirl, and that's been taken away from everyone. Like, I don't know if you guys seen all the reaction videos this week of
people showing
their children the Little Mermaid trailer, so that they can see like a black Ariel and like how much that means to so many people. And I could imagine this would be the same thing, and that's just been taken away from everyone. So it's pretty sad. Thing is, this is the same company that owns HBO Max, which is a major streaming service in the US. Their kind of content is spread along all of our Australian services.
Yeah.
But, you know, we love a lot of their shows. All of a sudden, overnight, they just took out a whole bunch of content, just removed it straight off the platform. And some of it is stuff that is available elsewhere, like Sesame Street. But other things are like HBO Max originals that have been taken off, have never been released anywhere else. So suddenly there's all this content that is just completely unavailable. The internet absolutely shat itself because they're like, what's next? Is the whole service getting shut down? What's going to get cancelled? And since then, they've assured that the service is going to keep going. And they haven't announced too many major cancellations since then, but it is really sad. Like, there's some great shows that have now just been great shows and movies that have been scrubbed off the face of the earth as far as Americans are concerned. One of them, Generation, is a show that I've praised on this show before. I really loved. If you're in America now, you can't find it anywhere. So
there was a more than one animated show, like a kids animated shows that were, you know, praised or popular that now are just gone. Multiple seasons of the show, new seasons that had been, or a new season had been completed that will never see the light of day because the show is just gone. Not just scrapped, also off the HBO Max service, but like the YouTube clips and stuff are gone. Like, it's almost like it's been erased completely off the face of the fucking earth. Yeah, and that's a problem for people who are looking to get work other places. Because if you can say, well, I did 5 seasons of this animated show, but I cannot point you in the direction of where you can look at it, you may as well have not done the work. It's just fucked, the whole thing.
And none of these decisions are made based on the quality of the show. It's all based on, like, how many residuals do we have to pay to keep it on the service? If we have to pay this company because there's music's in it, or this company because, you know, they have the rights to this, that, or the other, they just ripped it out. So,
Jesus.
It's pretty sad.
Some of the movies that are gone now include Lockdown, Seth Rogen's time travel comedy, and American Pickle, which I had watched. I think that might have been on Netflix here even. I have watched that.
Yeah.
Charm City Kings and the House Party reboot. But
the House Party reboot, that has since changed. That's going to get a cinema release instead of getting a HBO Max release.
Gotcha. Kind of fucked. And this is the worry, I guess. So we've seen this bubble of streaming services just building and building and building and building and building for a while. And like Netflix has had its stock drop earlier in the year because its subscriber base actually went down rather than up. And it's had to cancel a bunch of shows here and there. And all of a sudden, you're not sure what's going to last anymore. At what point do we get to where some of these services just go bust and content that never gets released physically disappears forever? Could that happen to Netflix? Could that happen to other streaming services? Like, will it get sold off and to the ones that remain? Maybe, but maybe not. Maybe it's just gone. And so watching this happen to HBO Max, which I got to say, like, we don't get HBO Max here, but HBO is considered the premium, like, TV station, whatever you want to call it, right? HBO Max, sort of the other online-only version of that, kind of felt like it was a sure thing, kind of felt like it shouldn't have problems succeeding. But now with this merger, it's just at the whim of financial decisions made by higher-ups who don't give a shit about any of the art that's being produced. It's kind of fucked.
This is why physical media will always be important, and this is why piracy will always have a place, because we can't trust our art to be owned by these giant corporations that don't care about the things that they own.
Paul's sitting in front of his giant wall of Blu-rays.
Yeah.
Going, yes. Yes.
He's a living archive. But seriously, like, films that I truly care about, even ones that I have immediate access to online, such as I've praised Turning Red multiple times, both on this podcast and on yours, Paul. Mm-hmm. Chances of me putting that Blu-ray disc into my PS5 or my Xbox and actually watching it are slim, but I'm glad I've got it. Because A, it supports the creators directly, and fucking Pixar needed that after the fact they didn't get a cinema release for Turning Red. But also, it's there, and I've got it if I, for some reason, it ever just disappears. It's put in fucking Disney's vault or whatever happens, right? Same with Everything Everywhere All at Once. I've got that on Blu-ray because I need to have a copy of it. Yes, you need to borrow that, by the way, Liam, because I can't believe you haven't seen that movie yet.
Yeah, me either.
On a side note, Turning Red, because I just did a trip to Disney World.
Yes.
Turning Red in the shops has a giant presence. So, obviously, they've got a market for it. There is so much merchandise for that film. So
very glad to hear that.
I think they think Pixar's making their coin on there somehow.
I hope so. Okay, that was the major stuff around HBO Max. Let's talk about announcement that was made pretty recently, or at least a report on this. Among a million things announced by Marvel Studios at San Diego Comic-Con, this is a month or so back now, it's been confirmed that Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio will return as Daredevil and Kingpin for a new MCU show, Daredevil Born Again. Obviously, Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio played those characters originally on the Netflix Daredevil series, which lasted for 3 seasons, and then the Defenders. Then sort of they went under. We didn't know if they were going to be connected to the MCU proper ever again, but then Charlie Cox appeared, spoilers for Spider-Man No Way Home.
Well, that's a bad way of saying that. Charlie Cox appeared, spoilers for this next movie.
Appeared briefly in Spider-Man No Way Home, and then spoilers for Hawkeye, Vincent D'Onofrio appeared in that as Kingpin again.
And is going to also appear in something else, but I'm not going to spoil what it is.
He's already been announced to be in Echo. But
and something else.
And something else.
Yeah.
Ooh,
She-Hulk.
Charlie Cox is, yes.
Charlie Cox, yes.
Yes, not Vincent D'Onofrio. Sorry, yes. Charlie Cox has been...
Sorry, spoiler alert, everyone.
in the trailers a while back now. He was going to be in that too. So this follows the majority of Netflix Marvel shows being added to Disney Plus, except for The Iron Fist, I think, which makes perfect sense.
Absolutely.
And then we also know, Daredevil Born Again show, which is based on a comic book run as well, is slated for a spring 2024 release on Disney Plus and will consist of 18 episodes, which is curious too, because I don't think any Disney Plus show has really gone for that many episodes yet. It's not had a long run. They've normally peaked at about 8 or 9 episodes. And on top of that, Charlie Cox is also going to be voicing Daredevil in the upcoming animated Spider-Man Freshman Year series, which is sort of like the prequel series to Tom Holland's Spider-Man that we know from the MCU.
It's funny that Charlie Cox is being hired to do a voiceover version of Daredevil, because I remember when he was first cast in the role and when the show first came out, a lot of people were criticizing that his voice was very generic English person trying to be American rather than an actual New Yorker. And now, you know, he's just being paid just to voice it, which is funny. But
are you looking forward to more Daredevil?
I didn't watch the last season of the Netflix show. Neither did I. But I did like Charlie Cox as Daredevil, and I like the show, but I think the show wasn't as strong as what it deserved to be, so maybe like a better produced Disney Plus version might be what we need. I don't know, but 18 episodes, like, oh, so many.
Yeah, it is a lot. I'm interested to know what the format's gonna be.
That you have that reaction to things now. We have that reaction to things now. It's like 18 episodes. Ugh, so many. Remember back the old days? It was like, why is there not 24 episodes in this season of this show that I want to watch?
Are you looking forward to more Daredevil then?
Yeah, I am. I mean, I also never finished it, and I never watched the Defenders.
You didn't miss anything.
Yeah, but like, I enjoyed the first two seasons of that. Mm-hmm. I really did. And also the first season of a couple of the other shows. But yeah, and I like what he's doing, what, you know, that brief cameo he had in
Spider-Man
No Way Home. Spoilers for Spider-Man No Way Home. and also Vince D'Onofrio in Hawkeye, spoilers for Hawkeye. Yeah, I'm excited that I'm glad, because yeah, he is a great Daredevil. He is a great, what's his name? What's the character's name?
Matt Murdock,
sorry. He's a great Matt Murdock. Cut that bit out. Great Matt Murdock. I know you're shaking your head. I think he's a great version of that character. I'm excited for him that he's getting recognized for that, and they're not just sweeping it under the rug like they definitely could have done, which we all thought they were going to do.
The real question is, how long until there is a multiverse crossover with Ben Affleck's Daredevil? That's never. What I want to know.
Never.
In casting news, set promo photos, for Sex Education Season 4 show Dan Levy joining the cast. And it appears that Tanya Reynolds, who played Lily, and Patricia Allison, who played Ola, won't be returned to the show, alongside Simone Ashley, who played Olivia, who is also out since they've broken out on Bridgerton, and also Raquel Thakra, I believe her name is, who played English teacher Emily Sands. There's been a mass exodus of actors from Sex Education Season 4, but also we get Dan Levy out of it. So
yeah, I think that's it. Just got to be able to afford Dan Levy. He's a hot property.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident, like, in that show's ability to make us love any character they put in front of us. So, like, as it's sad to lose some people, but I trust the show at this point that it's still going to be great.
Also, I think we all agreed that Ola and Lily's sort of storyline in the later season was sort of probably the most underwhelming of the season 3. So it's, I mean, I don't think it's going to be completely missed, but
I could have done with more Lily. I like Lily as a character. Ola, I think, was never a character that particularly interested me that much. Miss Sands, I'm going to miss a bit. I like Miss Sands.
Yeah.
You can breathe a sigh of relief because David Krumholtz is officially returning as Bernard, Scott Calvin's chief elf for Disney Plus's The Santa Clauses TV series.
It took until the very last bit of that sentence for me to understand.
I wrote that sentence in a very specific way.
Burying the lead there, mate. Spoilers first, The Santa Claus 2 and 3 is not in it.
He was in two.
I retract my spoiler alert.
Are we looking forward to the Santa Clauses? There was a teaser which had Peyton Manning auditioning for the role of Santa Claus in it.
I've only ever seen the first one. I know that Hilary Duff's on the soundtrack for the third one. That's all I really know about.
I recently rewatched all of them. They get worse as they go.
How recently?
In the last year.
Like at Christmas
over December?
I think it must have been over December.
You'd hope so. It's like, last week, fucking middle of September.
Hey, they're timeless.
They're specifically timed for a very specific time of year.
For those interested, go to my Twitter where I make a pitch for the fourth film, which now has been turned to a show. So here's my prediction for this show.
Okay.
His son will end up being Superman. What? His son will end up being
that would be a twist.
Santa. Yeah, what a twist. His son will end up being Santa. And it should have been played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt. But anyway, that'll take a bit. It's fine.
Sure. Yeah, see, it does seem like the pitch of this show is, yes, he's retiring as looking for a replacement, Santa Clauses, as the title. I didn't realize that until I wrote it down last night. It's called Santa Clauses. So it's multiple. Yeah. That show is premiering November 16th. So you can look forward to watching it then, Liam.
I think that's in reference to him and Mrs. Claus. Because the trailer opens up from behind her head. So it's
but that doesn't make any sense because the way it's written, Claus is in reference to the contract.
Correct.
That is given to him.
Also a
so
yeah.
so there'll be yeah, so multiple if clauses for multiple Santas.
Yeah, but if it's in reference to him and his wife, why does she have a clause?
It's also not called the clauses. It's called the Santa Clauses.
The whole second film is about him finding a wife because if he doesn't find a wife, he doesn't get to be Santa anymore.
No, it's not the Santa Clauses.
She has a clause.
Yeah, but that would be she's Mrs. Claus, not Mrs. Santa Claus. So the Santa Clauses is Santa Clauses, multiple Santas.
Also, Martin Short is incredible as Jack Frost in the third film.
Great.
Absolute standout of that film.
Apparently the highlight of the Emmys today was the little bit that was done with Martin Short, Steve Martin, and Selena Gomez. They did a little set introducing.
Everyone
was saying, it's like, if they're not hosting the Emmys next year, what are we even doing here?
Yeah.
All right, next up on the list, RuPaul's Drag Race winner Shay Coulee has been cast in Marvel's upcoming Ironheart series. Speculation is that Coulee will be playing Shade, a drag queen superhero who she apparently inspired. Does that excite you at all, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, she's great in the show, and I'd be interested to see what they do with her. I mean, at this point, there's so much fucking Marvel content, everyone's going to be in it, so...
I'm going to be in the next Marvel.
Yeah.
And also, John Corbett is officially set to be reprising his role as Carrie's other guy, Aiden Shaw, in, and just like that, season 2.
Yay!
You're excited about this, Paul.
Is that the one that she meets up with in Sex and the City 2?
Yes. Yeah, and they kiss.
I can't believe I watched that film.
I'm not really excited about it. But, I mean, you know, it is what it is.
This podcast is not doing me any good for like having to, like, yeah, I recently watched all the Santa Claus films, watched Sex and the City 2. I have great taste. What am I doing on this show?
In cancellation news, as we mentioned in the opening of last week's A League of Their Own Season 1 review, Amazon's Paper Girls series, based on the comic by Cliff Chiang and Brian K. Vaughan, has been cancelled after one season. It's the sort of the news is it's being shopped around to other networks, but they say that all the time and it never really pans out
So Brian K. Vaughan cannot catch a break.
No, he can't get past one season. I think The Dome, which he show run, might have got more than one season.
There was more than one season of Runaways. Not that I watched
That's true. There was a couple of seasons of Runaways. And I stopped watching episode two because it was focused way too much on the parents. It was very fucking weird. Did anyone watch Paper Girls?
No.
Damask did.
This makes sense.
Yeah. Damask did have a very good time with it. To be fair, though, while I was aware of the show, I knew it was coming. I even saw a trailer. I wasn't aware when it arrived. It's sort of been buried, probably because Amazon was promoting Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, so heavily. And rightly so, they need to, because they've spent a fucking fortune on it. Mm-hmm. But it sucks when there is not room given for these sorts of shows, and then they just sort of appear and disappear. And, like, it's one thing for things to be deleted off HBO Max. It's another thing for them, like, to feel like the show never existed because it just didn't get time to have any cultural awareness whatsoever. No one was aware it existed. So everyone that I know who's watched it, including listeners of the show, said it was great. I'm planning to watch it, and we might review it still. We'll see, because it would be nice to celebrate a good show like that if it's not going to get a second season. Everyone's saying check it out. So Paper Girls on Amazon Prime Video.
Talking about the Rings of Power advertising,
yes,
and how much there is.
Yes.
It's got even to the point of, if I open up an Adobe program now, the splash page is an image from The Rings of Power.
Seriously.
So it's like, oh, here's like a illustrator version of Galadriel. Here is a Photoshopped version of the two dwarves. Yeah, like that's how much it's like, oh, the artwork, the concept art was done in Adobe programs or whatever.
Oh.
And it's like, it's all from that. So
does Amazon own Adobe?
No.
Oh, interesting. That's just a cross-promotion thing. That's interesting.
I know when I was in the US, like, all the buses were covered with Rings of Power and all the billboards.
Yeah,
and same in Melbourne.
Yeah.
We were talking about it in the car the other day. We're like, oh, there's a billboard.
If you order something from Amazon Prime, it arrives and the sticky tape, like the tape to seal the box, has got the Rings of Power stuff on it. In less sad news, Netflix's ill-conceived Resident Evil series has been cancelled almost as quickly as it arrived. Anyone I know who gives a shit about Resident Evil gave that a try and said it was bad. So
it looked terrible.
It did. The trailer, it was one of those shows where I haven't watched it, so I can't speak to it directly, but the trailer made me go, what the fuck are they doing? Like, it shouldn't be this hard to make a Resident Evil show and just be somewhat faithful to the source material. It was real weird swerve they took with that show, and I don't know what they were thinking.
I saw one scene from it on YouTube, and there was like a musical or something, and I'm like, what the hell is going on?
They should have led with that. That's interesting.
There's a character singing to somebody, and like, or lip syncing to somebody in an office somewhere. It just didn't. I'm like, this is Resident Evil?
CW's The Flash is set to end with its upcoming 9th season. Are any of you guys fans of The Flash?
No.
No. I'm not a fan of any of those CW DC shows at all.
Fair enough. I guess that's why it's been cancelled after 9 seasons.
Yeah, because of me. Because clearly 9 seasons was enough, right? Those shows, I have an opinion on those shows where I think they went, where DC, I think, went two very different ways to, like, they did the opposite of what Marvel did in what I'm talking about, like, early days, where Marvel was been a little bit more fun with their films and you know, having, you know, a little bit more lighthearted, and then their shows, like your Netflix stuff, was a lot more grimy and dirty and stuff, and then DC did the opposite, and it just felt wrong to me. It's like, you have way more time in a TV show to develop characters and do that more gritty stuff, whereas someone's going to see a movie, you want it to be something that they can enjoy the whole way through. And I think that's what the DC were getting wrong with that stuff. And it did, and also just felt cheap, all the CW stuff to me, trying to watch that. I couldn't watch The Arrow or anything like that. I was like, oh, it just looked cheap. Anyone else?
No, I agree. Like, they never appealed to me. Like,
thank God, because you guys were silent.
It's a lot of the same, like, production team behind, like, the Riverdale and all that stuff. They work on all the DC
that makes
stuff. So
a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And what is essentially cancellation without ever stating it, or actually starting production, the Buffy the Vampire Slayer reboot is officially, quote-unquote, on pause, which considering it was announced in 2017 and basically ever since then, I think it was 2017. Well, it was announced a while ago anyway, and Joss Whedon, his star has been falling faster and faster and further since.
Was he involved?
He was going to be an executive producer on it, yes. He wasn't going to show run it. There was a few things that were interesting about it. They were going to cast a person of color as this new Buffy. I think an African-American woman. I'm not sure if they ever got to the casting stage, but that was the plan. And it's never got any further than that. I was curious on it. The idea of like rebooting Buffy and modernizing it could be cool, but also maybe really ill-conceived trying to catch lightning in a bottle twice.
Sounds like when they rebooted Charmed.
Yes.
That feels very similar.
Only I think Buffy has a bigger cultural footprint than Charmed. And would have got a few other more eyes on it, we'll say, than Charmed probably did. Paul, you're about to say something.
No.
Okay.
Were they gonna let her fuck? Or were they gonna go Lizzie McGuire on it?
they let Buffy fuck. What are you talking about?
Oh, I know. Yeah. I'm sure it's a joke.
In release date news, The Handmaid's Tale Season 5 will premiere on Hulu on September 14th. That's tomorrow at the time of recording.
Isn't that already currently happening in America? Isn't that just the news?
Pardon?
Isn't that just what America is right now? Is this The Handmaid's Tale?
I see what you're saying. Sorry.
Season 5, it's the most immersive season of television. Yeah,
just look out your window.
As far as I can tell, the news is all just that... Queen Elizabeth died, because that's all the news has been for the last several days here in Australia. Literally,
spoilers for The Crown. Yeah.
That's it. No more of those spoiler jokes, because you did it. You nailed it, Paul.
Speaking of The Crown, very briefly, I didn't actually have this in my official notes, but The Crown Season 5 is set to release sometime this year. I think November it's meant to be coming out. Season 6 is in production. They've apparently halted production right now to absorb the news of Queen Elizabeth's second death.
So it's a whole bunch of people in a writer's room pulling out all their scripts that they wrote for when the Queen dies.
I don't think that's true. I think it might redefine how they finish the show, though. It's like, do you do an additional episode to get to that moment? And like... see Charles getting crowned or whatever. I would not be surprised if this now does define how the show ends. It starts with her dad dying and her getting the news that she's now the queen. It'll end with the end
queen
of her
has
life now,
returned to her home planet.
So the next year, the Emmys, when the hair and makeup crew get an Emmy for the work they did on the prosthetics of Prince Charles's hands.
Oh, sure.
It's going to be incredible.
Like, yeah, have you seen those? Real... shown to us by a friend of ours. He's got like swollen
hands. Where do you think
hands.
I was going with that?
I don't know. The corpse of the dead monarch? Jeez. I'm not sure what you were going
with that. Jeez, bro. That was Bron, everybody. That's his pitch for season 6.
That was my pitch. That was my judgment of you. That's what that was. Going back to The Handmaid's Tale for a second, it's also been announced that season 6 will be the last of The Handmaid's Tale. It won't be the last of The Handmaid's Tale universe on TV. They're apparently going to adapt the sequel book, Margaret Atwood's sequel book, The Testaments, into a television show as well, which is set 15 years after The Handmaid's Tale, I believe, in the book series. But that's coming eventually as well. But season 6 will be the last of The Handmaid's Tale. The next Star Wars series, Andor, will have a 3-episode premiere on Disney Plus on September 21st. Are you guys excited all for Andor?
Is Disney Plus just like... ramping up to just releasing every episode of every show at once, like doing the Netflix thing rather than doing it week by week? So every time they release a new thing, here's 2 episodes of it. Now they're doing 3 episodes of it?
It's usually a bad sign. It usually means that the good stuff doesn't start happening until the last bit of the third episode is fuck.
I agree.
I mean, the trailer looked cool. Like, the visual style of it looked cool. And
this is the thing, though. Disney trailers always look good. It's never a question of, like, can you pique my interest? It's can you sustain my interest once the show arrives? Because that's the thing they're struggling to do at the moment. They can get my first look, but can they keep me around for the entire thing?
Star Wars in general as well is just...
That being said, Mandalorian Season 3 looks good.
Yeah, it looks great. But, like, I mean, Mandalorian is an outlier in terms of good Star Wars content. Like, I've said this before, but, like, there's, like, 2 good three good Star Wars films.
I think Star Wars fatigue is definitely, like, I mean, I heard there's a rumor floating around that we're going to open Star Wars Galaxy's Edge in Paris Disney, and apparently it's probably getting cancelled and getting replaced by something else.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. AMC's series Anne Rice's Interview with a Vampire, that's the title, arrives October 2nd. Are you guys fans of the book, the film? Are you looking forward to this TV series at all?
Movie's good. I never read the book.
Hot take. The movie's good.
Actually, good. Even hotter take, I actually have a real soft spot for the other Anne Rice adaptation, Queen of the Damned.
Mm.
I don't know if you ever watched that one. Where
the movie with, what was the actress in it that passed away? Aaliyah, that's right.
And the soundtrack by Korn.
Mm, that's right, yeah. That's very, is that 90s or early 2000s? Must be early 2000s.
I think it was 2002.
Yeah. Very
early. So you recommend it, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, if you...
Right, I'm not watching it.
Oh, fuck yeah.
HBO's surprise hit The White Lotus will also return for season 2 at an unspecified date in October, but coming up real, real soon. And considering, unless that... You know what? Considering how well The White Lotus did at the Emmys today, it's possible that the news might have dropped today and I missed it. But last I checked, October sometime is when that show's coming out. So I look forward to that. Are you guys looking forward to White Lotus season 2?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Yeah. The cast looks excellent. Mm. Hopefully it can live up to it. This is always the question. Season 2s, especially for an anthology show, it's like... Can you possibly live up to the original? We'll see.
It wasn't lightning in a bottle.
Exactly. Apple, and also the timing of The White Lotus season 1, I think probably played a bit of a role as well. It just sort of dropped at the exact right time. There wasn't a lot of original programming coming out. It sort of somehow managed to be formed during lockdowns across the world and ended up being great. Like, there's a bit going for it there.
Mike White's last HBO show, Enlightened, got better, like was started off very strong in season 1 and got even better in season 2. So since he's still involved, I have total faith in it.
Very cool. Apple TV Plus comedy Mythic Quest is returning for its third season. It's already been confirmed to be getting a fourth as well. But the third season is coming this fall, aka between now and December. A lot of vague dates here. Netflix new comedy set in the last Blockbuster video store, creatively titled Blockbuster, will premiere November 3rd with a 10-episode first season. You guys looking forward to Blockbuster?
No.
Why wouldn't you be? It looks really good.
Who's in it? What's her name? Amy from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
And Tyler Alvarez from American Vandal.
Okay. I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. And, like, I used to work in a video store. I used to manage video store. This is my life made into a TV show. I have so much nostalgia for video stores. So,
I'm interested to see is how accurately it is able to represent that for you. Yeah. Because if it's off the mark, I need you to I need your critique on this one, Paul.
I definitely will be able to give that to you.
Is it set in? Like, it's the last one standing?
Yes, it is the last Blockbuster.
Right, so it's not like a 90s, early 2000s, Pen 15 type show. It's set now.
Not now. The last Blockbuster has been, I think, gone for a while. But
No, it's been gone for like 2 years.
It's a while. it's like, yeah, 2010s, I guess. Yeah, a little slight skip back. I think. The Disney Plus Willow series announced its premiere date of November 30th with a new trailer. Have you guys checked this out at all? Are you at all excited for Willow? I think the last time I asked you this, you both said no.
Yeah, I haven't watched it. I haven't watched the original film.
Well, my partner Steph likes the movie, so I'm looking forward to the TV show. In renewal news, FX's The Bear has been renewed for a second season. Has anyone watched The Bear?
No, it's dropped on Disney Plus now, so I have to give it a go.
I've heard a lot of my hospitality mates are like, it is the most accurate representation of working hospitality I've ever seen on TV.
Cool.
Yeah, I literally just before we started recording, I had someone messaged me saying, have you watched The Bear yet? Just finished it. It's amazing. So
okay, cool. Looking forward to watching season one.
It's my blockbuster. Season two. I can't wait to watch.
Sure. It's your blockbuster. Very good. When's the chiropractic comedy? Oh, wait, they already did that. It was Two and a Half Men. Even though we still can't watch Harley Quinn in Australia for some fucking reason.
HBO Max, man.
Season three.
It may never come.
Season three is apparently so good that it's officially getting a fourth season that we won't be able to see. So looking forward to that. Surprising no one, Hulu wants Only Murders in the Building back for a third season, considering it ends on a cliffhanger. Again, no surprise, and it's been a big hit for them. But that's definitely coming now officially. Apple,
I have a question. Yes. Are you going to do an episode for that, for season two, on Hunty Seasons?
No. Probably not.
We can just release like a conversation between you and me about it if you like.
We can talk about it tonight if you like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think. There was, listen, it's partially on the docket, but I'm happy to have at least a preliminary conversation now. I don't think we're going to get to that.
I've also seen it also.
Yeah, okay. We can talk about that when we get to what we've been watching. Because actually I did ask Damask and she was like, it's a nice show to watch, but I don't think I've got a lot to say about it. So yes, we can talk about that later. Let's do that.
Yeah, let's do that.
That's fantastic. A promise now, listeners. Look forward to
spoiler
that.
Spoiler for Hunting Season. We're going to talk about that.
I thought you said we were done with the spoilers. I thought you said the Crown one. Apple has renewed Rose Byrne-led Physical for a third season. And for All Mankind, for a fourth. Have either of you guys watched either of those shows?
No.
No, neither have I.
This is some good content tonight, guys. You guys watch it? No.
I will say For All Mankind does feature the actor Charlie Slatter, who I interviewed for my podcast.
Yes.
So if you're a For All Mankind fan, come and listen to the episode of the Swapcast podcast.
That was a good episode,
shameless
too.
Plug.
For All Mankind is one of many Apple shows, actually, I think about that I've been meaning to get to. Physical, less so. I don't know. Not hearing enough buzz or intrigue on that one to really get me excited to watch that one, even though I love Rose Byrne. Meanwhile, Larry David is getting a 12th season of Curb Your Enthusiasm on HBO. Any Curb fans here?
That's a big blind spot for me. I only ever watched episodes here or there, but
yeah, same. Like
I know so many people that watch every episode multiple times. But
did you say you're like a big
fan? I'd probably enjoy. I think it's a show I'd probably enjoy, but I've watched here and there. It feels like a blind spot for me in the same way like Veep is, because only episodes I've ever watched of Veep, I've been on an airplane going somewhere and I've watched like a whole season of it. And I've loved it. But then I've never gone back to watch it again in real life. Curb's a little bit like that for me.
In other news, Chris Rock has told an audience in Phoenix, Arizona, that since the notorious Will Smith Oscar slap, he's been asked to host the next Academy Awards, but has declined as it would be like, quote, returning to the scene of the crime. we predicted... a few people did, that he would be hosting the Oscars next year, because that's the most cynical thing that could possibly happen. So, of course, the Academy gave it a go. Good on Chris Rock for saying no. Actually surprised me a little bit they did that. Any thoughts
on
that?
I'm sad, though, because I really enjoyed the season... the year that he hosted.
They hosted,
I don't know where you were going with that. Yeah. I really enjoyed it when he got slapped. That was... best Oscars ever.
The dream of a community movie remains alive. In a recent interview with The Wrap, director Dan Harmon is quoted as saying, legitimacy is here. Conversations and agreements are happening. There's a story. Who knows if we'll end up sticking to it, but it was something we had to complete in order to take it out and court various venues, and now negotiations are happening. A week earlier, Alison Brie on the Unwrapped podcast also said, there's been movement, there's been some talks, people are talking, and certain things, wheels are turning. Now, that's obviously vague as fuck and could still be 10 years away from this thing happening. But it's the most certain, I guess, that Dan Harmon has been that this thing is going to take place. And I'm when he is at the point now, and I think he's got enough cachet at the moment, to get this sort of thing done. The community sort of had a big, regained some popularity during COVID, people were watching it again. I think this is now an inevitability rather than a maybe, which is pretty damn exciting.
Do we think it's 100% going to be a straight to streaming movie. It's not going to
come out. Oh, yeah, yeah. It won't be at the cinemas, no.
Does that feel like a little bit of a letdown in terms of the whole six seasons of the movie thing?
No.
And it just comes straight to streaming?
No, it's a movie.
I understand that, but it's like, then it's just a long episode.
Not if you, it depends how it's made. If it's made with a cinematic mindset,
if then, it looks like a movie,
yes,
yeah, that's yes. gonna be cool.
If it looks like the show, but goes for an hour and a half, that would suck. But if it looks like a movie, then it will be worth it.
I feel like they could go the Kevin Smith route and do like a fan funded cinema release where, you know, they tour with the film or something. I could sure. see people coming out for that. There is a way for this to be released in cinemas because the fans, it does have a similar fan base to something like Kevin Smith's fan base.
Look, if Clerks 3 can get a cinema release, then I think a community movie can definitely get a cinema release.
I just don't think, it needs to release at cinemas anymore. The way that we consume movies is different. Prey, which we'll talk about later on the podcast.
Absolutely should have got a cinema release.
Should have got a cinema release, but doesn't mean it wasn't successful and doesn't mean it wasn't a movie just because it was released on Hulu or Disney Plus here in Australia.
Are we literally writing the script to the community movie right now? Because you know this is going to be a conversation between Abed and somebody.
About whether it's going to be a cinema about release or streaming.
Like, yeah, exactly, yeah.
There will definitely be a line about it being just straight to streaming. Yeah, yeah, like, 100%.
Fine. It doesn't need to be. Yeah. I'm really interested to see what they do with it. Like, it has to be the right story.
It's kind of fun when a TV show gets a cinematic release for their movie. Like, I enjoyed going to, like, it wasn't an amazing film, but I enjoyed going to see the Bob's Burgers film in cinemas.
Oh, did you see
the same with The Simpsons? Yeah. With The Simpsons.
Simpsons, in terms of its popularity, is way above Community and, let's be honest, above Bob's Burgers, as much as Bob's Burgers is way better product these days.
And Bob's Burgers did okay. It still made like, you know, 70 million or something.
Didn't really make that much.
So, yeah, so, you know, it wasn't like it was a flop.
I didn't realize it made that much money. That's pretty impressive, actually. I did watch it on Disney Plus and it was very good.
Do you think it's integral to get Donald Glover back?
Yes. Yes. If you don't get Donald Glover back, don't even bother trying, I don't think.
I completely agree with you.
But I think the thing was, ever since they did that reunion, that was well and truly established that was going to be the case.
Yeah.
Chevy won't come back though, will he?
Well, no, he's dead.
Well, the character's dead. Spoilers for Community. Let's fucking hope not.
Yeah, but you know, that doesn't mean they couldn't bring him back if they wanted to.
Another news item that actually was on the docket somehow, but while we're talking about TV shows getting movies, a while back now, I got very excited because Avatar The Last Airbender was going to get movie treatments, theatrical animated movies. Originally, the creators had moved on from Legend of Korra, were going to be making the Netflix live-action series. They left that, went back to Nickelodeon, and formed Avatar Studios, which is making new original animated content. We knew there were three movies in production. We didn't know what they were going to be about. But at San Diego Comic-Con, it was finally announced that the first of those movies will be about Avatar Aang and the Aang Gang in between, in the years or in a period after the animated series ends, but obviously before The Legend of Korra. We don't know anything more than that, but there was speculation there was going to be a movie that was focused on Zuko. There was speculation there was going to be one on Avatar Kyoshi. This means nothing to anyone who hasn't watched the series. But fuck, I'm excited. They actually released Avatar The Last Airbender movie about Aang and Sokka and Katara and Toph and Zuko.
I'm so in.
Fuck,
if Nickelodeon play their cards right, they have their Star Wars. They have their franchise that will be like a guaranteed moneymaker. I think there's an appetite. People love this series.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's an appetite for 2D animation back on the big screen.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Like, this has a potential to be huge. I really hope it is.
I think also fantasy is back in a big way. It's a very different sort of fantasy as well, but I think there's a little bit of, like, we've done a lot of sci-fi in recent times, dystopian, dark sci-fi. I think we're sort of entering, or maybe in the middle of, a bit of a high fantasy kind of movement at the moment. There's some, being The Rings of Power, obviously, different sort of show, but The House of the Dragon. I think this might hit at the right time too. So I hope you're right, Paul. I hope you're really right. The Emmys were on mere hours ago. I haven't had a chance to really absorb the news that much. But I did see some highlights here and there. Paul, you're our resident awards guy. You always bring this stuff. Tell me what happened at the Emmys.
I didn't actually watch the ceremony, to be fair, but I think there's some...
you had one job, Paul.
some pretty solid...
Aside from your actual job that you were probably doing, which is why you didn't watch it live.
But yeah, there's some pretty solid winners here. So best comedy was Ted Lasso.
Hey, amen.
Good. I think we can very all agree. Season.
What do we know what was up against it? Like, does that feel right to you? Were there snubs in there that were missing out?
So it was up against Abbott Elementary, mm-hmm. Barry, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Hacks, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Only Murders in the Building, and What We Do in the Shadows.
That's a lot of nominees and a lot of good ones, let's be honest. There's some great TV in there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, Ted Lasso is a great choice.
Yeah.
For me, it would either be that, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Yeah. Between, and Hacks. Oh, it's such a hard choice.
Go through the list again for me very quickly. Just
Abbott Elementary,
yeah.
Barry. Curb Your that's not for me. Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I'm with you, Paul. I'm with you.
Curb Your Enthusiasm, Hacks, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Only Murders in the Building, and What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, there's great stuff in there.
I think Ted Lasso, out of the seasons of the things that I've watched on that list, I think Ted Lasso is right to have won.
Yeah, I mean, What We Do in the Shadows just gets better year to year. I really loved that last season. So, yeah. Outstanding drama series. The nominees were Yellowjackets, Stranger Things, Squid Game, Severance, Ozark, Euphoria, Better Call Saul, and the winner, Succession.
Yeah.
Yeah. Correct answer. Can I ask Severance? Severance definitely could have had a crack at that one. But
Can I ask a question here? There haven't been Emmys in 2 years, right? Is it the same thing as the Oscars?
Yeah.
So these shows, like Squid Game came out, what, end of 2020? Or the start of 2021?
Yeah.
So it's like these things that the last couple of years as opposed to like, it just feels like Squid Game's on that list, but I feel like I watched that 2 years ago.
It always feels like where the cutoff date is like often a little earlier than we think as well.
Yeah, it's like the middle of last year to then the middle of this year.
Yeah, yeah. It's a pretty big... It's further back than you think, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But yes. Okay.
Definitely you could have easily given that to Severance or Euphoria as well is phenomenal. So, but Succession is just
Succession
another level.
Absolutely.
Brad, have you watched Euphoria yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh.
It's so good.
I'm watching a season of television every week.
Yeah, I mean, why isn't that one of those Euphoria? Like, this is some groundbreaking television.
Anyway. Outstanding limited anthology series, The White Lotus one against Dope Sick, Dropout, Inventing Anna, and Pam and Tommy. Pam and Tommy and White Lotus, but I'm going to say White Lotus deserved
it. I'm going to say the White Lotus deserved it.
Yeah.
Shockingly, RuPaul's Drag Race did not win Outstanding Competition Program.
Whoa.
First time in a while. Watch Out for the Big Girls one, I've never watched.
Neither have I. Don't worry, RuPaul will win next week specifically for All Stars 7 because that was great.
Yeah. Well, RuPaul won, like, I think Best Host and a whole bunch. I think they won like 10 awards at the Technical Emmys last week. So
it won't be for Amazon Down Under, the Technical Emmys, let me tell you.
Totally.
So I won't go through all the nominees, but lead actor Jason Sudeikis won for Ted Lasso in a comedy. Yeah.
Yep.
I would have personally given it to Steve Martin, but outstanding lead actress Jean Smart for Hacks.
Yep, great. Is that both of them 2 years in a row?
I think so. Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
Zendaya won for Euphoria,
also
for best
2 years
actress
in a row.
Yes. In a drama, and she one episode of this season where like you watch it, you're like, there's no way anyone else could win.
Mm-hmm. I know that's that episode. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. My God, my God. Rod, why have you not watched Euphoria?
A history-making win. Lee Jung-jae won for Squid Games.
Yeah.
Foreign language winner.
Saw Dave Chen's reaction to this because also Squid Game won a couple of awards as well, I think. And just seeing, like, it's probably, it started to happen a little bit more frequently since Parasite won the Oscar as well, but, like, just international films, particularly Korean and Asian market films, getting recognition in Western awards ceremonies is pretty cool. It's good to see. That's one thing that streaming's really allowed is, like, just by having more breadth and width of shows, things that you don't expect to catch on and, like, other things get recognized. It's really great.
Yeah, and I mean, I think he did an amazing job with
that. Oh, yeah, he's excellent. Oh, 100%. Excellent.
Yeah.
100%.
The Keaton sense continues. Michael Keaton won for Dopesick for limited anthology series lead actor. Amanda Seyfried for The Dropout, outstanding lead actress in an anthology series.
That's a great actress.
Outstanding supporting actor in a comedy was Brett Goldstein for Ted Lasso.
Yes.
Another well-deserved win.
Love Brett Goldstein.
Outstanding
supporting actor. Herculean effort, yeah. I would say.
Yes.
Spoilers for...
outstanding supporting actress in a comedy, Cheryl Lee Ralph for Abbott Elementary, which cool. I haven't watched any of this show yet, but I hear good things.
So. Is it now on Disney Plus, I believe? Yeah, yes. I feel like this is a show I want to give a watch. The fact that it's got given this, another news that didn't make it in, but it's been renewed for a 22-episode second season, I believe, going from 13 episodes, which is a real show of confidence for an ABC comedy. They sort of don't do that sort of stuff as much anymore. Like the fact that that blockbuster show, I know it's Netflix, but it's only get 10 episodes, even though it's like traditionally would be about a 20-episode season for that sort of sitcom.
I feel like Elementary would be sort of in the same sort of way that Ted Lasso, I was like, I looked at it going, really? And then watched it finally and was so surprised by how good it was.
I actually saw a great video today on Twitter, just sort of absorbing some of the Emmy news. Someone had collated, like, they were talking about why it won, a writing award, right? And what they did was they took slices of lines from the show and then overlaid them with people's tweets just retweeting that joke because the joke was so funny for them. And I thought that was a really good way of pitching, like, the show, but also it's connecting with its audience. And it made me want to watch the show to be a part of that. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm keen to check it out.
Outstanding supporting actor in a drama, Matthew McFadden in Succession.
Matthew
McFadden being...
Tom.
I thought so. You're really burying the lead here, aren't you, Paul?
What's that?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's saving the best till last.
Okay.
He knows what he's doing. Matthew McFadden is well deserved, though.
Yeah.
Best character in the show.
Outstanding supporting actress in a drama, Julia Garner in Ozark, another show I haven't watched.
Yep.
I'm mostly noticing
No Better Call Saul stuff coming up. I would have thought that would have been.
I think that's this year.
They have nominations. They just didn't win.
Just not winning.
Oh, really?
Mm. And these are the two that I was very excited about. outstanding supporting actor in an anthology series, Murray Bartlett.
Yes.
For The White Lotus.
Yes.
Armand was an iconic character and some Aussie pride there.
Did I see that he was on RuPaul's Australian
Drag Race? Drag Race?
Was he?
He just appeared for like a minute, did a video call.
Hate when they do that. Just get them in to judge. Fucking hell.
He's probably busy doing things in Hollywood.
No, it's a trend throughout the entire show, Liam. They're like, this week Bindi Irwin's going to be on. No, Bindi Irwin does a one minute video call and that's the inclusion. Yeah. Rather than having them on.
I mean, I'm less excited about Bindi Irwin. But anyway.
But yes, Jennifer Coolidge won for The White Lotus, Best Supporting Actress in an Anthology Series. An amazing, iconic speech that she gave. But I'm so glad she's finally winning awards because she has been the best for so long.
There was a promotional video went out for a new Netflix series that's coming out that's got Jennifer Coolidge in it. I think it's called The Watcher from memory. I'll send it to you guys later. I'll put it in the show notes.
Is this the, like, real estate?
Yes.
Oh, yes. I watched that today. Yeah. I was like, what is this?
Jennifer Coolidge is not the main character, but she's a character in it. It's based on a true story, apparently. But basically, it's just if you've ever seen, like, realtors walk through, like, a really expensive property and talk about, like, its features and so forth, it's Jennifer Coolidge getting to be a realtor doing that. It goes for about 4 minutes, and it is a joy. And
it is a joy.
It'll be paired perfectly with watching her acceptance speech at the Emmys today.
And then if you want a nice taster after that. Watch her performance in Cinderella Story.
Oh God. Okay. Okay.
Right.
She is a fucking delight in that movie, and I won't hear anything else.
Was there any other news that came out of the Emmys, or was that the main stuff? Just those winners?
That was all the main awards. Beautiful. Yeah. I think like Ted Lasso, Squid Game and White Lotus all won directing awards, and yeah, it's pretty much the same things kept winning. Gotcha. Awards.
It certainly seemed like that. Yeah, it was all our repeats there. A few new people, but a lot of like, oh yeah, you know, Succession winning again and et cetera. Obviously,
it's good to see though the people though that are winning the awards aren't there's some really diverse names there in terms of newer to the scene.
Yeah.
And true. Also people that should have had Jennifer Coolidge, obviously. But like, yeah.
Absolutely. Quickly, before we get to what we've been watching, there was a lot of news. There was news, let's say, that came out of D23 and the Disney Plus day. If you're interested in Marvel and Star Wars and Pixar and Disney stuff, we've talked about a couple of highlights already. Was there anything that stood out? I would say a lot of stuff I already knew was coming, sort of just got a few new details.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of announcements for upcoming projects. Like you mentioned pre-us recording, Pixar films like Inside Out 2 and Elementals are coming. What else stood out to you,
Inside
Paul?
Inside Out 2, yes. Right? I heard that two of the actors aren't coming back for the roles within, like, it's Amy Poehler, absolutely, but
yes.
Phyllis and somebody else, I think.
Was that confirmed? Angry. Or?
Yeah, confirmed that they're not returning.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Yeah, because they haven't really said what the plot of the film is going to be. We don't know if it's going to be set in Riley's mind or another person's mind. We don't know if it's going to, what it is. So just the name and that's it.
I'll be honest, I'm surprised Inside Out 2 is happening. That, don't know, I feel like we might have done as much as we can with that idea. But like Pixar, they've proved me wrong before, but the sequel thing worries me.
Yeah.
I agree.
Was there anything else that stood out, though, announcement-wise, Paul?
I think some of the Disney animation ones sound... Oh, the Pixar also announced a film called Elio, which sounded interesting, about a kid who is mistaken as the human ambassador in an alien world or something.
Oh, yes, yes. That was that was a Pixar or was that Disney?
That one's Pixar.
Okay, cool. Okay.
Yeah. There's a new princess in the film called Wish, which is a Disney animation one, which shows the origin of the Wishing Star from the Pinocchio movie.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I mean, I started watching the Pinocchio reboot.
This is the Robert Zemeckis directed one, yeah?
Yeah, and it was not great.
The reviews, what I picked up from reading headlines was that it's barely a movie. Like,
It's just the same as the fucking Lion King one where it's like, okay, it's live action, but it's not. It's just CGI. Like, it's just literally the only thing that's real in the scene is Tom Hanks. It's like they couldn't even fucking bother building a set that for him to stand in. And it just feels cheap. Like, he's like, he's got all his cuckoo clocks.
Yeah.
And one, they've made all the cuckoo clocks Disney properties. So, like, one's Toy Story and one's this and that. And then, but on top of that, they didn't fucking bother building the cuckoo clocks. They're just, like, badly CGI'd. It's like, at what point can you not even be bothered building a clock?
This is shocking because Robert Zemeckis has always only been associated with amazing CGI. this is a real shame.
Yeah. But yeah,
spoiler
anyway.
First.
No, Liam. You can no. You're dead. Kill it.
Spoilers for Beowulf. Probably the announcement that depressed me the most out of everything was the Lion King prequel called Mufasa that follows Mufasa and Scar as young kids. But like the CGI remake of The Lion King was so bad. It was so bad. And everyone hated it. It made $1 billion.
That's the key, Paul.
But we've seen this happen before. Alice in Wonderland made $1 billion.
This is true.
Sequel came out and no one watched it. sometimes you have to say, okay, did people actually like this film when they watched it? Okay, now we'll make a sequel.
Well, it's not a sequel. It's a prequel.
So we'll do the reverse. We'll make $2 billion, unlike the sequel. The thing about the Alice in Wonderland film, though, I think people forget as well, is it hit... It was like the next big 3D movie after Avatar came out. Like, it was almost like the next one off the train.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big part of why it made so much money as well, because people were like wanted that next hit after Avatar was such a huge success. And so by the time the sequel came around, no one gave a shit anymore.
But I think Lion King... We'll find out. But I feel like Lion King's a bit of a similar situation. Like, people went to see Lion King because they had an affection for the original. Mm-hmm. Then they all went and watched it. This is a piece of shit.
Do you think things fail?
I hope this film fails.
Surely one of the benefits of Disney Plus, though, is they can, like, have all this sort of metrics coming in of how many people are watching and rewatching that live action, quote unquote, Lion King movie. And what if more people are watching that than are watching the original 1990s animated one? And that's why they're going, well, we need to do more of this.
I so hope that's not the case.
Don't underestimate the stupidity of people, Paul.
That actually depresses me so much.
Like, they've surely there is hard data to support that they should make this movie. Not just the $1 billion it made 3 or 4 years ago, but the fact that people are still watching that film on Disney Plus. They would know for a certainty.
Maybe they're making it for the animals that are watching it. Because remember when we watched it, Brod, and Arnold? I've never seen Brod's cat react to anything like this.
It's true.
But Baby Simba, he was up there. He was like, what is going on? Who is this? So, realism.
Have you ever actually spoken to anyone that has loved
this? I thought you just ended the sentence there. Yeah, I'm doing it right now, Paul.
Have you spoken to anyone that has liked the new Lion King more than the
other
one?
Not a soul. Not a
no
soul.
One. No, the, not you'd soul. Have to. No one that's, not committed. Right? <They're> like
Someone, I want to hear. That's I want to hear from test. Audience members who... not only liked the live action Lion King film, but prefer it to the 1990s animated version. I want to hear from
please.
You.
Yes, I do as well, because I want to know who to block on social media.
Yeah. You hear that? Guys, you hear that? That's everyone. D23, though, there were a couple of trailers that were released that I was excited about.
Yes. What was that?
Secret Invasion.
Yeah,
trailer.
This is the another Marvel Disney Plus show. This one featuring Nick Fury, Kobe Smulders,
Olivia Colman.
I mean, Olivia Colman's always going to get me interested. Just by her being there. God love Cully.
I thought it looked interesting. I'm excited for it. It looks, I don't have Marvel fatigue. I'm excited for everything that comes out about Marvel. So I know that I'm digging upwards right now because you guys, but
I had that break. I had a month break from Marvel when I was overseas, and then I came back and started watching She-Hulk, so I think my Marvel fatigue is over now. I'm enjoying it again now.
I'm really enjoying She-Hulk as well. Yeah. Now I'm worried.
You know what we should do? We should talk about what we've been watching.
Okay.
What a great segue. Look at that, everybody. That's real. How many episodes of this have you done? Well, perfect. You're a real professional podcaster.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Paul.
Yes.
What have you been watching?
What did you watch on the plane?
I actually, on the plane, I loaded up all the seasons of Drag Race onto my iPad. So I was watching Drag Race France, Celebrity Drag Race, Drag Race Down Under, and Drag Race Canada. Wow. It's the perfect thing to watch on a plane. Like
I disagree. The perfect thing to watch on a plane is the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
I thought you were going to say Veep.
What?
Or Veep, yeah. Lord of the Rings trilogy. When I flew to New York in October 2019 before the world changed, I just put the Lord of the Rings on and it was great.
If when I want to watch Lord of the Rings, I want to watch it on my giant projector.
Absolutely.
I don't want to watch it on my
iPad. But if I'm on a plane, I just want to have something that I can fall asleep to and wake up and not feel like, oh, what have I missed?
Yeah, but if I fall asleep, I just turn it off.
But you're asleep.
Yeah, so if I feel myself falling asleep, I'll turn the thing off and then fall asleep.
Paul, what have you been watching?
I knew that was going to happen. Screw him. Let's keep talking about it.
So one thing I did watch when I was overseas while I was traveling is a TV show that's on Paramount Plus here in America. Hell.
Wow.
How
he's been gone for a month here in America.
Paramount Plus here in Australia, a show called I Love That For You. Have you guys heard of this?
I have not.
No.
So it's apparently based on a true story, which I didn't realize and I haven't really looked into that, but it says so on the poster.
must be true.
Yeah. But it's about a woman who pretends to have cancer in order to be a host on a home shopping network.
Wow.
Yeah, it sounds real.
And this show is fantastic. It's anxiety-inducing but also hilarious and heartfelt and, really well-written. It stars Vanessa Bayer from Saturday Night Live and Molly Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
And Molly Shannon is just phenomenal.
She's always great. Except in the Kath and Kim American remake. She's always
great. That's not her fault, though.
No.
Yeah, that was out of her control. But I think she does some of her best acting that I've ever seen her do in this show, actually.
Oh, wow.
Even compared to some of the more dramatic stuff that she's done.
She was good in White Lotus for that one or two episodes, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was great in White Lotus and the other White Mike White movie, Year of the Dog as well. She was fantastic. But I would highly recommend this show. I think it's really good. I think Paramount Plus is a bit of a like death sentence for TV shows in Australia. Like not many people have it. I think pretty much only soccer fans have it because you can get the soccer on there.
Sure.
And it seems like if a show's on Paramount Plus, no one's talking about it.
There was a tiny moment where it looked like the AFL, Aussie Rules Football, might have been snapped up by Channel 10 and Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
And that would have done a lot of good for the content on Paramount Plus, and it didn't happen in the end.
Probably would have done a lot of good for AFL.
It might have done a lot for the sport as well to have someone else fucking getting except for another 7 years of Seven and Fox. But anyway.
Yeah. If you do happen to get a Paramount Plus subscription for any reason,
you
give
accidentally
that show a go.
Press that button when you go looking for Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our mum did that.
Another show that dropped while I was overseas was the new Brazilian spin-off of Queer Eye on Netflix. So obviously there's been, I think, like 5 or 6 seasons of the American Queer Eye. And then we got a German Queer Eye earlier this year, which was okay. Like I enjoyed it cause I love this format so much. Like Queer Eye is like a drug to me. I love it. But I felt that in the German one, like especially the home makeovers, felt very cheap and nasty and weren't up to the standard. This Brazilian...
No one can compare with Bobby, let's be honest.
No.
Bobby, literally holds up that show on his shoulders.
But this Brazilian Queer Eye is actually fantastic. I think all 5 of the main guys are fantastic. Like they're all really good in their respective fields. A bit more diversity. One of them's a trans man. He's really good. The house makeovers are actually fantastic. And it's interesting because you go to a different country and the architecture and the way people live are a lot different. So it really does make a different challenge altogether, making over these people's houses. But I think, you know, the trademark of this franchise is that it is so heartwarming and emotional. Mm-hmm. And this definitely has that. I was ugly crying multiple episodes of this show. So if you're, you know, jonesing for more Queer Eye and can't wait for the next season, definitely give this a go. Like, I know there is a dub on Netflix. I didn't try it out, but like, I watched it subbed. If you can put up with the subtitles, I would definitely do that. But who knows? Maybe the dub's okay.
That is something that's probably stopped me from watching it, if I'm being honest. I think the thing about Queer Eyes, it's one of those shows I can kind of watch and not necessarily paying super close attention to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And but the subtitles, not that I'm happy to watch a lot of shows with subtitles, but usually it's something that's I'm probably wanting to pay attention to 100% of the time anyway. So with something that's a little bit lighter, like Queer Eye, where I might come in and out or be doing something on my phone while it's on, that does present a bit of a challenge in terms of how eager I am to watch it. Does that make sense?
Yes. No, I get that.
Yeah.
So maybe the dub is right for you then.
That might be, yeah. Which is a horrific thing to think about, but you might be right.
Yeah, if you watch it, let me know what you think.
Sure, sure.
Another Netflix show I want to give a shout out to, even though I don't think the show itself is fantastic, but a show called Boo Bitch. Have you guys seen this?
No.
No.
I don't know how you... The depths you find the depths
what is your algorithm
on Netflix? What is your algorithm? You know, actually, what, Liam? This makes total sense.
Yeah.
What is Paul's algorithm?
It's true.
All right. So this is like a teen comedy that got released a couple of months ago. The main character is played by Lana Condor, who was like the main character in the All the Boys I Loved Before movies.
Sure.
I don't know if you saw any of those. So.
I think I saw them both, two that have come out so far. The two so far?
I think there's...
Or all three out now?
I think there's three.
I've seen at least... Two. I think I've seen one or two. Anyway.
This film is about a couple of girls. They're kind of like the invisible girls no one pays attention to in high school. And then one of them gets crushed to death by a moose on her way home from a party and wakes up dead, but still able to interact with the people around.
Liam just figured out the title.
I have, yes. No, I didn't until you said that, but I have actually watched a trailer for this, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So,
I have my algorithm's showing me this now.
Yeah. So it's a very fluffy, light teen show. And it's not always great, but it's a very, like, if you like trashy, like, teen movies, it's very, like, nostalgic. I think the way kids are dressing now are the way we dressed when we were growing up. So it's very nostalgic. It almost feels like a period piece in that way. But the one thing I wanted to shout out is the supporting actress in this, Zoe Margaret Coletti. So she plays kind of her best friend. And this, if you watch the show, you might think whatever of the show, but you cannot deny that she is going to be huge. She walks away with this. She was also in this season of Only Murders in the Building. She played like Steve Martin's...
Oh, right. Okay.
Like, daughter. Yeah.
Daughter. Yeah, like yeah, daughter
yeah.
figure.
She's great. Yeah.
She is phenomenal in this show. And it's kind of like... You put this performance in this kind of like fluff show. Worth watching just for her, honestly. And she gets a lot to do, especially towards the end of the series. So, but I know a lot of people just want like something that they don't have to think too much about and kind of fun tone, short episodes. This is definitely fits that bill.
Cool. So that's Boo Bitch on Netflix.
Yeah. And finally, on TV shows wise, I wanted to shout out the new Darren Star show. He did shows like Sex and the City and Younger and Emily in Paris. And his new show,
God, Uncoupled. What a trio of shows that was.
Bro's face. Like, here we go.
His new show, Uncoupled, which stars Neil Patrick Harris.
Okay.
And it's about Neil Patrick Harris is a real estate agent in New York. He's been with his partner for like 14 years. And then all of a sudden, with no warning at all, his partner breaks up with him. So he thought, you know, he was ready to, you know, spend the rest of his life with this person. And all of a sudden, he's single again as a man in his 40s, in the gay world. And I have to say, like, this show is a lot better than I thought it was going to be. There was definitely stuff that's happened in my life that I actually found very relatable in this show. So it kind of hit me in a lot of ways I didn't expect it to. But that being said, it is a very like Darren Star, you know, affluent people in New York. Lots of sex puns.
Hey, like, hey, sometimes they're in Paris.
Yes, sometimes they're in Paris. but yeah, so it doesn't reinvent the wheel, but Neil Patrick Harris is very good in it. I think it's maybe a little bit more intelligently written than some of his other shows. So I would definitely give this one a go. I think it actually has something to say, and it's fun watch.
Do you think it helps that maybe because he's writing from his own perspective a bit more than say about four white women in New York? You know, yes. Maybe gives it a bit more authenticity, which is why you're connecting with it, and it feels a little more genuine and like.
Also, Paul was in America for a month, so he gets
exactly.
It.
Yeah, I'm basically a New Yorker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's had bagels before.
There's definitely there's conversations that they, you know, because they, you know, this show, the main group is just a bunch of gay guys, so there's like conversations they have between themselves. I'm like, I've had that conversation, you know, so it is very much like that. Cool. So,
Uncoupled, where do you find that? Sorry?
That's Netflix as well.
Netflix too. Very cool.
Yeah. I did have the opportunity to go to the movies a few times when I was over there as well. So I saw Nope, and I actually got to see Nope at an AMC theater. So I got to see the famous Nicole Kidman AMC commercial on the big screen.
Really? Was it the new one or the original one? Apparently there's a new one too.
The new one hasn't been made yet.
Oh, okay.
It's in the production stage.
Does it live up to the hype?
Yeah, it's pretty glorious seeing it on the screen. I saw Nope, which have either
genuinely
of you guys seen this yet?
About. Nope. Nope. I'm actually more jealous that you've seen the Nicole Kidman ad. Sorry, go on.
I don't want to ruin too much about this film, but
appreciate that.
It's really cool. It goes into some unusual places. I think if you're expecting a traditional narrative where everything connects with each other and gives you a tight, you know, bow on the end, that's not what you get here. But it has some really cool ideas and some really cool sequences, like unforgettable sequences. And of especially interest to you guys, there's some direct references to Akira and Neon Genesis Evangelion.
I need to keep remembering that because that's the thing that should get me to the cinemas tomorrow.
Yeah. I think it might already be out for rent, possibly.
Is it already?
Yeah, okay, I'm pretty sure it's on a streaming service already.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. Okay.
So, definitely give it a go. If anything, it's an interesting movie and an ambitious movie.
The question, which it's an unfair question, but I think maybe it's a fun way to frame it, is of the three Jordan Peele films now, obviously Get Out, Us, and now Nope. What great titles, by the way. How would you rank this? How would you rank those three movies?
I would rank it Get Out, Us, Nope.
Get Out, Us, Nope. Three.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I enjoyed all three.
Okay, cool.
And if you want to hear my thoughts on Get Out, go to the Swapcast podcast.
I was going to say, you made a good comparison to M. Night Shyamalan. He's now at his third film, Signs.
Yeah, so I'm worried about the village.
I'm worried about him.
Hopefully we never get his Lady in the Water.
Yeah.
He made the same joke on
this episode. Didn't he make, was the Happening, was that Shyamalan as well?
Yes.
Oh, fucking
but
God.
But I kind of want to see Jordan Peele's Happening. Actually, in a way, this has some similarities to the Happening as well. Okay. But I won't ruin it.
Okay, you just undid my Neon Genesis hype.
No. Not in a bad way. Okay. I also got to see George Miller's new film, 3,000 Years of Longing.
Yes. What did you think?
Have you seen it, Liam?
No,
laughing?
But a friend of mine is a visual effects supervisor for a company called Method in Melbourne. And they do a whole bunch of Marvel stuff. And then he also told me about this film he was VFX supervisor on with Idris Elba as a genie. And I'm like, what? He's like, I have no idea what the tone of this film is going to be. And then I saw a trailer for it. I'm like, is this the film? He's like, yeah, that's not what I thought it was going to be at all. I know nothing except about, because they just, all they worked on was like the particle effects or something on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, any good?
Yeah. It's very ambitious as well. I appreciated it. I appreciate it. I liked it. I really liked it overall. It's not going to be everyone's cup of tea. It's a very much its own tone. I just appreciated the fact that it's, you don't see films of this genre, which is like a romantic fantasy done on this scale with this budget, with this cast. Yeah. And it's very episodic. It's like, it's two people in a room telling stories to each other, and then you see the stories acted out, kind of thing. And yeah, it doesn't quite stick the landing, but everything in it is quite strong. So I would recommend it overall, but don't expect a perfect film. Don't expect Mad Max Fury Road for sure. It is quite beautiful and ambitious and weird and, really cool.
George Miller making it demands my attention.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to see that. He can do this. He can do Mad Max Fury Road. He can do Bay Pig in the City. Like, you got to check them all out.
And finally, I got to see the new A24 horror movie, Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. Have either of you guys seen or heard about this one?
No, but critic friends of mine who saw it at MIFF said it was like really, really great. It was the highlight for them.
Yeah, it's a really fun movie. Stars Pete Davidson. The main character is played by the actress, sorry, I forgot her name, that played Borat's daughter in Borat 2. It's kind of like, oh, and Lee Pace is in it as well.
Did she end up winning an Oscar, or did she just get nominated?
It's a really fun kind of slasher murder mystery set in a house where a bunch of insufferable Gen Zers are having a hurricane party, and then one of them rocks up dead. And then it escalates from there. Really clever, really fun, really of the moment. Has a lot to say about this generation. And
you said that with a real sigh.
Yeah,
this generation.
Yeah.
Do they just sit around doing nothing while everyone gets murdered? Is that it? Because they have no, they don't want to work. Is that the idea?
No, but
they can't afford locks on their doors because they all eating too much avocado, is that it?
I would also recommend this one. It's a lot of fun. Maybe don't read much about it before you go into it, because there's definitely some surprises in there that I didn't see coming.
Oh, okay, so, cool.
The one thing we haven't spoiled tonight.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you, Paul. Cool. That was a great little selection. Liam, what have you been watching?
I've been watching a lot of just great stuff. Really, really insightful conversation about the Happening. No, I watched all of Community actually again, which is great.
The whole thing from start to finish.
The whole thing. Actually, no, I skipped season 4, which you're absolutely allowed to do. And God, that's a good ending to a show.
Like, isn't it great?
I hadn't watched the ending to that show. For some reason, I just never watched that last episode until like a year ago.
Sure.
And then, yeah, I've...
Being on Yahoo made it a little bit harder to get to that stuff, yeah.
It was. But yeah, they really stick the landing with that show. But what I have been, the things I want to talk about are the big things that are happening currently, like the week-to-week shows.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously, you probably are going to go into more in-depth conversations.
Yeah, about some we can have a preliminary talk. None of them have, I think the ones you're about to talk about, maybe one of them has ended recently and we probably won't review it, but the others, listen, they're review pending. So I think we can talk about them where we're at now.
Well, one of those is that the one you're referring to, is that Only Murders in the
Building? Correct.
Right. Okay. Well, let's talk about that last because the two big fantasy things at the moment, which is Rings of Power and House of Dragon.
Yeah.
Which are very different shows, but it's hard not to compare them because they're coming out at a very similar time.
The budget, them the both budget. Theoretically being of the fantasy, high fantasy
based
genre.
Based on books, all this kind of stuff.
Based on fantasy novels, exactly.
Prequel stuff from true well-known franchises.
Yep.
House of Dragon, I've been watching it. You know what I mean? I'm not watching it, sure. But I find it hard to get into because it feels like, because I think what Game of Thrones had going for it was a whole bunch of different stories in this whole entire world. And currently right now, it just feels like it's just stories about this one family. And it's just, it feels slow and I found myself like really just like I started Googling trying to find out what happens, like
sure,
based on the books and what's known, because I'm like, I just don't see where this is going. Currently.
I watched the first episode and it really didn't inspire me to keep going. Like, do you think it's worth keep going after the first one?
I think yes, there is like some really great action in it. There's some really good like action sequences that are happening within it that I think are only going to get better as the show gets bigger and grander. But it just, yeah, I think it's trying to latch on to that Game of Thrones nostalgia that we all have. Remember it being great, but I change my answer?
Because I just found it to be like completely humorless, very dour, like to the point where Game of Thrones wasn't like that at the beginning. Because we had
Tyrion,
like Tyrion.
Yeah, sure.
And we had different like settings as well. Everything has that kind of gray tinge to it in this show. Like in the original season, like when we followed Daenerys, we were like shot these beautiful vistas in Malta and everything was like shot well. This feels bargain basement to me.
Yeah,
like,
because
especially after watching Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, we're only in King's Landing and Dragonstone, literally. And this latest episode, they went to the forest, to the woods, which was a bit more interesting, but like it's not grabbing the attention of me. Like, I think it thinks it will.
I think there's a few, I've got a theory on this. A few things are working against us. Number one is we've done so much of this before, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, the fact that it's set in King's Landing primarily, at least I've watched the first two episodes, it's all essentially set in King's Landing with a couple little detours here and there,
mm-hmm.
Is difficult because it doesn't feel or look different. Yes, it's set 200 years before Game of Thrones, but it could
just as easily be set at the same time.
Totally, right? We've also done this sort of story before in Game of Thrones, which is politics, 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 all these different houses, family politics, but also politics between houses.
Dragons.
Well, that's the thing too. It's like, if dragons were the pool, well, we kind of got three dragons. You're not impressing me by having more dragons, if that makes sense. But that dynamic of like the politics and the family politics and the houses politics, it's that again, but with now new houses that I now have to learn
everyone's
names again. And that was like the thing for me.
There's a Lannister, wink wink.
When Game of Thrones first started, I didn't fall in love with it after episode one. Episode one takes primarily place at Winterfell.
Yeah.
And then we get the Daenerys stuff happening is the sort of the B plot in that episode one. And I wasn't hooked straight away. Like, it took me a little while to get to know these characters. By the end of the first season, I was like, oh, okay, I really, really am into this show. I see what it's doing. Because it pulls a magic trick at the end of the first season, which got me hooked. I was going off good faith that I kept watching all the way to the end of season one. And then it builds from there.
then they can't do that with House of Dragon. They can't make us wait until the end of the first season for something like that to hook us.
But
it's got to happen early.
Another big part is, yeah, we've also got Game of Thrones fatigue because of how that one ended.
Yeah.
But also, we at least had the Starks, who are sort of the underdog, likable family protagonist. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, the Daenerys, yes, also, you're sort of on her side too. But the Lannisters were fun to hate. Tyrion is really enjoyable to be around, though, so he got on his side quickly. And especially Jon, Ned, Catelyn, and Arya. Not Sansa straight away, because she's a pain in the ass in the first season.
Not Bran. Ever.
But what I mean is, like, there is just enough humanity. There was enough of that stuff that you like the Starks. You're kind of rooting for them at the very least. This show just doesn't have those sorts of characters in it. And, like, the epicness of it and, like, the story they want to tell about this tragic fall of the Targaryens over time, it might be interesting, but it's...
It's never going to be Game of Thrones.
Well, if it might be, but it's just... It's got a lot of work to do to get me there right now. I don't know if I can be fucking arsed, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I agree. Which leads me into Rings of Power.
Sure.
Which is, for all intents and purposes, similar kind of, like, you know, they're doing
It's high fantasy. It's a prequel.
It's a prequel based on stuff that we know.
Yeah.
But it is fantastic. It is doing something... It feels different. It doesn't feel like... I mean, yes, it feels like Lord of the Rings in the best ways possible by, like, just the way, the feel of the world that they're in and how what it looks like, but it doesn't feel like we're in that same era because it is set about 1,000 years or whatever before. Is that what it is? I can't remember how
it's another. It's 1,000 or 2,000 years earlier. Yeah,
right. So it is Middle Earth, but it's completely different Middle Earth, and people are in different places. People are doing different things. Blah blah blah. It's able to do something different and make you feel like it's doing something different as opposed to House of Dragon. I mean, it's hard not to compare the two because they're both coming out at the same time and doing very similar things. And I'm absolutely loving it. And it's also gorgeous. Rings of Power is just...
The money is on the screen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it just looks expensive.
And I'm so excited. I'm thinking about it during the week going, oh, I wonder what is going to happen, as opposed to House of Dragon where I'm just going to watch it because it's there and I don't really pay attention.
It just makes such a huge difference that it has color. It has color in the frame. I made the mistake of watching that first episode of House of Dragon right after an episode of Lord of the Rings. And it just looks like you're watching the show through muddy water. Like, everything's brown and gray.
It feels like it's on a back lot somewhere. Whereas Rings of Power feels like you're in this world.
Yeah, like that. The latest episode of Rings of Power, they're on like this giant harbor. That's a set.
Yeah,
and you can tell it's a set. You can tell it's water underneath that boat, and you can tell they're going towards a real building, and it makes a difference.
Yeah,
it really does.
I think the thing about Rings of Power, it is both tapping into our nostalgia for the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings films, which were 20 years ago now. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's not like Game of Thrones, which was only 3 or 4 years ago that finished. Right. It is. And also ended with a massive disappointment. Right. Mm-hmm. The Lord of the Rings trilogy is still beloved. 20 years later, we're clamoring for more. Yes, the Hobbit trilogy came out and they weren't that great, but it didn't quite have the same
disappointment
that the Game of Thrones had, because the build up wasn't as big. So there's that refreshingness to it. There's also just refreshing because, as you said, Paul, color, right? Mm. And, like, it is high fantasy that is really embracing the high fantasy aspect of it. We're talking elves. We're talking dwarves. We're talking trolls. We're talking orcs. Like, this is going for high fantasy. Yes, it's Lord of the Rings. Yeah. It's Middle-earth.
Yeah, exactly. And there's character. There is... characters in this, as opposed to House of
Dragon. There's imagination, I think, there is...
House of Dragon is just a whole bunch of broody people standing around having conversations about being broody. It's like
boring
conversations. I think it's come at the right time, and it is succeeding on so many levels. The music in Rings of Power is fucking phenomenal. It is so good. And it is, yeah, it's really scratching an itch for me in a big, big way. As a massive fan of the Peter Jackson films, he's not involved, but it is taking the right notes, is hitting the right aspects from those films, even some of the ways it's filmmaking. It is, for something that is a prequel also, it is setting up some great mysteries of, like, you know what the end point of for some of these characters are. You ultimately know how this story has to end, but there is so much in between that I don't know. And I'm looking forward to finding out how we get there, the journey to get to that point. It is probably my favorite show of the year so far. It maybe was Succession this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, Succession and Severance have a lot to... We'll tap me on my shoulder and say, what about us? But right now, I'm enjoying the show immensely.
Saying all of that, yes, is that these shows are only 3 episodes in.
True, exactly.
Who knows what's going to happen. But long, like, long currently, and it's you know, those first few episodes are a big thing. Like, when you're watching a new show, is they need to hook you and they need to grab you, and one of them has and the other one hasn't.
Well, if your problem with House of the Dragon, that's all taking place in one place, right now The Lord of the Rings has so many characters in different locations, they can't actually show all of them in a single episode. Like, in episode 3, we didn't spend any time with Bronwyn, we didn't spend any time with Elrond. And let me tell you, I'm looking forward to spending more time with Elrond in fucking Khazad-dûm. Which looked amazing, and I want to go there. Like, holy shit.
Yep. Correct. And the only other show that's not... what's it called? What are we talking about? Sorry, later. Early Motors in the Building. The only other show is She-Hulk, which is... I know that, Brod, you are having struggles with it. I'm really enjoying it so far. I'm enjoying what they're doing with it. It feels different. It doesn't feel like it's this whole big world building thing like something like Loki was, or even for that matter, Ms. Marvel was very like lore heavy in terms of what they were setting up. And same with like Moon Knight. This very much feels like a more grounded but also not and fun show to be putting into the MCU. I'm really enjoying what they're doing with it.
Yeah, I think with a lot of other like MCU shows, it's like this is a Marvel show, but with a bit of horror influence or a bit of action movie influence. Whereas this is a comedy. Like, it's a comedy first and foremost. It just happens to be an MCU show. And I feel like if we're gonna only get Marvel stuff, then let it be wildly different from each other. Let it be a horror show first that happens to be set in the Marvel universe, not, you know, let it be what it is. And I've been like belly laughing during the show. I think it's really funny. I think Tatiana Maslany is fantastic.
Tatiana Maslany is incredible in this show. There's something that incredible. Marvel has been doing. Very good. If there's something that Marvel has been doing really, really, really well pretty much the entire way through the MCU run, ever since Iron Man, really, is its casting. It just seems to cast the right people in these roles. So even if I didn't overall love the show the whole way through, I'm usually at least invested in the portrayal of the character by the actor they've chosen. I don't think they've really failed at that aspect at all.
Which I want to say on this platform here, Ms. Marvel, she was incredible. I can't remember her name. Imana Valiant, is that her name? I'm sorry. I should know her name, but I know Damask wasn't convinced.
Yeah, I didn't get that criticism either. I thought
Damask.
I thought she absolutely nailed it. She was she was so fun to watch.
Listen to the people, Damask, they're coming for you.
It was instantly, a character it was a character that could have easily been insufferable, and she made it like lovable.
I am if you like her, she's also in real life a huge Marvel nerd, and there's a great interview with her by New Rockstars. Eric Voss interviews her, and they just literally nerd out about Marvel for an hour, and it is incredible. And he's like trying to get an answer out of her. She's like, I want to tell you so much, but I can't tell you. It's incredible. She's also a big fan of New Rockstars, so like it's quite funny. I recommend that interview if you like her and like Marvel. There you go.
I wished when I saw She-Hulk was coming, right? I had a wish that the show would be a 30-minute legal comedy, basically, right? I'm like, make this green Ally McBeal. Or more, yeah.
That's what they're doing.
Kind of. I now wish I'd been more specific when I said, I want this to be a legal comedy show set in the Marvel Universe. The Monkey Paw got me because it decided to make the comedy on the level of Big Bang Theory.
I disagree and completely with that.
Is I could a not problem. I forgot to tell them I wanted this to be Boston Legal in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Not fucking.
Have you watched Big Bang Theory?
Yes, like, I have. I've watched lots of it. It is. That's the level it's at. It's the level it's at. It really no, it it's is.
Not. It's
not. I honestly think funny.
This is absolutely on the same level as Boston Legal. If that's going to be your benchmark, 100%.
I've only watched the first season of Big Bang Theory. I promised a friend that I would give it a proper chance. So I watched the entire first season. Did not laugh once. Stone faced the entire season. Decided I will never watch it again.
What's
my laugh multiple times?
What are the highlights, joke wise? What stood out to you as being particularly funny moments so far in She-Hulk? Spoilers for She-Hulk, I guess.
Now you're putting me on the spot.
Yeah. Because I remember the one line that made me laugh. It was a timing, and the way it was executed was. I think it was the third episode. There was sort of. She-Hulk, Jen was doing the stuff with Abomination, and there was this other court case thing that was going on the other side. The B-plot was some shape-shifting elf person or whatever. I'm like, what the fuck? Why is this storyline happening? We don't know these characters. What are we doing here? And then eventually the two storylines merge, and Jen, because she does the fourth wall breaking stuff, just like leans into frame. It's like merging the A-plot and B-plot. Nice. And I was like, that's a fun... meta joke, because if you pay attention to how story structure works, especially in sitcom television, then that was a nice little nod to the format, I guess. Because Tatiana Maslany delivered it so well and it was so well executed, that line worked. Not much else has hit for me beyond that.
I really enjoy the stuff with the family. I think her dad, her relationship with her dad is really great. I honestly really enjoyed the Wong and Madison stuff in this latest episode.
I haven't watched the latest one, so don't ruin anything.
All right, I won't. Yeah. No spoilers for She-Hulk. But I don't think there's any particular jokes that I'm finding funny, but I just don't think it's like that they're memorable enough for me to think of it. But like, I think it is a better show than you're saying it is in terms of comedy. I am laughing out loud at this show.
Yeah, I'm really, really, really not. I'm not hating it, but it is because it's a comedy, and I'm not laughing that much. It's upsetting. It's upsetting.
Well, that's your prerogative.
It is, and I'm the one who gets to review the show. So
he's
guess
what? All the bits where we said it was great. but finally, yeah, are there murders in the building? Do we have time?
I want to quickly go through what I've been watching. Jeez, we're going long. So I'll make this very quick. Starting with when I saw Top Gun Maverick. Paul, you mentioned this the last time you're on. I know. It's the only thing I've been to the cinemas to see anytime recently. And Liam still hasn't seen it. Listen, it just came out at the exact wrong time for Liam and I to go and see it at the cinemas. It was piss poor timing.
But somehow, though, we did watch the...
Chippendale movie.
So I don't know.
anyway, when saw Top Gun Maverick, a lot of hype around this film going into it. Obviously made $1 billion at the box office. Everyone seems to love it. And for the most part, it lives up to that hype. I think ultimately what it comes down to is it just a really solid, competently made dogfighting. F1, whatever they're not F1, whatever the fighter jet movie is, Top Gun, but updated slightly to modern sensibilities while also really feeling like a throwback to the style of like 90s, 80s and 90s action films of the time. It's very much a dad film, if that makes sense, but it succeeds so well. It's kind of, it's exactly what I think Tom Cruise is just good at, because he's been doing this with the Mission Impossible films. It's just a really competently made and made in camera action film that's got just the right amount of heart and the right amount of character and the right amount of comedy and the right amount of action and the right amount of drama. It's just like perfectly formulated to hit well, which is I think why it's been so successful, because I don't think it's a masterpiece, if that makes sense, but it's kind of a masterpiece of the format in some ways. It's just so well realized and well made in that regard. I look forward to watching it again. I'm not rushing out to see it again. I don't think it's that good, but like if you're looking for something to watch and there's the right people around who haven't seen it yet, aka Liam, it's like, yeah, let's chuck on Top Gun Maverick. Absolutely watch that again. Don't know how you feel about that, Paul. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I totally get that. I think, like, I'm so glad I got to see it on the big screen.
That thing in IMAX might have been cool.
I would have killed to see it on IMAX. They did, like, a re-release, but it didn't hit any of the cities I was in when I was in America. So, or else I would have definitely, like, I liked it enough that I would have definitely made the effort and gone to see it again in IMAX. So,
I also saw Prey, the new entry in the Predator series.
I'm just putting myself out for this section.
You haven't seen Prey either?
No.
It's, pardon me, it's on Disney Plus. Sorry, it's on Disney Plus or Hulu, obviously, in the States, but Disney Plus here in Australia. This is made by Dan Trachtenberg, who was the director of 10 Cloverfield Lane, was meant to have been making the Uncharted movie at one point. There were about 4 different directors attached to that at one stage.
And anyway, he also was supposed to originally do Why the Last Man as well.
And was meant to do Why the Last Man as well. Fucking hell, yeah. Anyway, he got to make Prey. It was almost a secret Predator movie, the way that was presented and almost promoted. It, because of the Fox being bought by Disney, it's kind of been shuttered off onto Hulu, which is a real shame. This, like Turning Red, deserves a cinema release. And much like Top Gun, actually, is a great return to the format of a previously great action series and made competently like it was from the 80s or 90s. With modern sensibilities and a modern twist. Who would have thought that making a new Predator movie was as simple as let's make Predator but different setting. Like, yeah. Let's make Predator, but rather than guys with machine guns, let's put them in 1700s Comanche America, basically. It is excellent. A really, really, really great, like, and tight action film. I really, really liked Prey. Definitely highly recommend it. If you're a Predator fan, it's the best Predator film since the first one.
Yeah, I would second that. It's a solid, solid fun time.
Very well
made.
Absolutely. Had a really good time with it. Did that as actually a watch party with a couple of friends in Bendigo. We were just basically watching that in unison and texting each other back and forth, and it was a really fun time. It was a great way to watch the film.
I had to mute that group chat because of it.
Because you, sure.
I wasn't watching it.
Also, did we ever talk about RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars Season 7 and how that finished? I don't think we did, because I think it was still going when we... No, we didn't.
Definitely could have stepped out for this.
So this was, the latest season of All-Stars, Drag Race All-Stars Season 7. The last time we talked about it, I think Snatch Game had just happened, basically. Okay. And we were both very, very happy with Jinx Monsoon in that. Should we talk spoilers for this?
Yeah, sure. I mean, everyone who cares would have seen it by now.
Spoilers for All-Stars Season 7. Jinx Monsoon won. Jinx is the queen of all queens. Justice was served. This had to happen, right?
Yeah, I mean... They even changed the ending to make it happen. Like, they ADR'd lines to justify it.
Very obviously made sure to justify the decision, because if it really did come down to the lip sync, it probably should have gone to... who was it in the end?
Monet
Exchange. Thank you. I was going to say Shakur Lakes, we were talking about earlier. No, Monet Exchange. But ultimately, the best contestant of that season. And some of the strongest, one of the strongest contestants I've seen on Drag Race in general. Like, her season was phenomenal. Apart from basically the episode where they had to make a garment. Shay was, not Shay, sorry, Jinx was stellar throughout the entire thing. And also, a really great season just in general of RuPaul, I thought. If it hadn't been Jinx and Monet Exchange had won, or Trinity the Tuck, I would have been okay with that. They were all extremely fun this season, I thought. Really, really great stuff.
Are you planning to go see their Australian tour when they come next
year?
I
have tickets.
Oh, how exciting.
I'm very excited. I found out, because I didn't know until the week beforehand, that Jinx was in Australia at the same time as the finale.
Yeah.
She was in fucking Melbourne. I think chances were that show had been sold out for months, if not over a year.
It was sold out for 2 years.
2 years. COVID got in the way, because God, it would have been fun to have been at that performance. Yeah. So when news got around that that Jinx is coming out with Monet and Trinity, actually, isn't it? So it's three, isn't it? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is coming out next year. Yeah, Steph and I booked tickets. So looking forward to that.
And have you been watching Australia Down Under?
Yeah, I watched the first 3 or 4 episodes and I've sort of fallen off it. Steph's continued to watch it without me. She said the last episode was really good, the one where they did the makeovers. But otherwise, I think it's better than the last season, but that's not saying a lot.
Yeah, it's very much like one episode will be fucking terrible and the next one will be good. Like, it's been very inconsistent.
I think part of the problem is also, like, finishing All-Stars Season 7, literally, like, only winners in one of the best seasons of RuPaul that I've personally watched, followed by Let's Go Back to Drag Race All-Stars, was a little bit of, like, it was hard to go from that quality back down to...
Yeah.
It's because it's not just the queens necessarily that aren't quite to the standard. The production values on the Australian version of this show is just not there.
It is subpar.
It is lit so fucking poorly. It drives me insane. I cannot believe that this is getting the rubber stamp of approval to be produced and shown on television.
In one of the last episodes of RuPaul's microphone cuts out.
Are you serious?
Like, yeah, so like it's like full, like the room audio you're hearing, like with full echo.
Like, they dubbed the ending of All-Star Season 7. Why not do ADR for that, for fuck's sake?
Hey, everybody working on RuPaul's Drag Race Australia, I have an audio booth if you want to come and use it. Come find me. You can use it for free.
You'll need to get RuPaul in there as well, though, unfortunately.
Yeah, the problem is I'm pretty sure all the production is done in New Zealand, not Australia. So
it's true, too. Really, really quickly, because 99.9%, if not 100% of listeners will not care about this, but if you're a sport person at all, Aussie Rules AFL Finals are on currently. It's into its 3rd or 4th week this coming weekend. And if you've ever been curious about the sport, now might be the time just to watch a game or two. Because the final series has been unbelievably high quality football. I think it's the best example of the sport I've seen. If you were ever curious, now is the time to watch. I think they're producing an incredible product at the moment. I don't think anyone cares about that, but seriously.
I completely agree. On the same note, if you want to see a comedy of errors, you should watch the F1, Ferrari, and... Anyway, but everyone should watch Drive to Survive, fantastic Netflix documentary about the F1, and you might actually get really interested in it. Anyway, this season of the F1 has been... what's the word? Traumatic.
Traumatic. if you're a Ferrari fan,
like I decided to be before the season started.
All right, let's get to a little bit of spoiler talk for Only Murders in the Building Season 2.
You're now entering the spoiler zone.
All right, we can go for 2 hours, guys. Let's keep this quick. Yeah. Only Murders in the Building Season 2. I wasn't a huge fan of Season 1. I didn't hate it, but I certainly didn't love it nearly as much as the internet seemed to. What do you guys think of Season 2?
I, for the most part, I think I enjoyed the season more than I enjoyed the first season as a whole. I thought the B characters, like the supporting cast, had a lot more to had more chance to shine in this show than they did in the last season. And I enjoyed those stories. Obviously, Steve Martin and Martin Short and Selena Gomez together are incredible. And that you don't lose that at all. But the last episode was underwhelming and disappointing.
Oh, like what in particular? You weren't happy with who the reveal was?
I'm not happy with the fact. I think the last episode ruined the whole season because the reveal of who it was made no sense. And it didn't give the audience any sort of agency to try and figure it out. And I know for a fact that Brod agrees with me on this because, like,
imagine if I gaslit you, I'm about to tell you I love the season.
I know you're not going to.
Put you at the end.
We had an argument with our mother about this. You're not going to do this.
I'm pretty committed to embarrassing you, I must say.
Oh, good luck. You go and agree with Paul on this one?
Good point. I'm back around.
sorry, Paul. It made no sense. It made no sense for it to be that person. And the show had set up someone else to be the reason or multiple people that it could be. At no point could it be this person. And there was no reason or clues or anything earlier in the show for it to be this person to be the ultimate killer. Until the last episode where they literally explain it to you as the episode goes. And it's disappointing. Because I know we obviously compare it to shows like After Party where it is a solvable mystery.
And satisfying this, because it is solvable. Yeah, it's a legitimate puzzle. And I don't think Only Murders in the Building, neither season, and this one worse even than the first one, is a legitimate puzzle. Not only that, the problem I have with the finale is that it wasn't even solved by our core trio.
Yeah.
Ultimately, what solves the murder was the murderer leaving the murder weapon in Steve Martin's apartment. They eventually give it to the police. The police do what they would have done if they'd just gotten the murder weapon earlier, which is do a DNA test on it and figure out who had the knife.
And they wouldn't have known who that was unless the murderer had confessed that she was that person.
Not because of anything that our heroes did.
She just was frustrated
just
in the moment.
Just blurted it out.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's like, as a story and as a mystery unfolding, it is unbelievably unsatisfying.
Which I think I could forgive if the show wasn't about solving a fucking mystery. And the whole idea is about them solving this thing the whole way. Like,
especially when they do things like put Easter eggs in the opening titles and the end credits sequence to, like, leave breadcrumbs to try and suggest that these are important clues. Like, they do present it as being a legitimate murder mystery, but then don't do the work to actually have a legitimate and satisfying answer to that. And that has run its course with me basically at this point. I put it in a tweet. It is a mildly amusing, is a mildly amusing comedy and a terrible murder mystery show.
Also, what the fuck was Amy Schumer doing in this show, this season? She was in it for two episodes and had no reason to be in this show. Her character had no motivation for it to be in this show and important. It's like they forgot about her after the 3-4 episodes. They're like, oh, right, Amy Schumer was in this.
Early on, one of my favorite episodes was the one that was centered on Bunny, who was the victim and is an interesting character because she is obviously not an easily likable person, right? She has a difficult personality, But we get to know more about her. We get to know more about her life inside the Arconian. We get to know more about the people around her. We get to see her last day. And I assumed that that would be important to the outcome and the result of her murder. Turns out, it wasn't. Not only is this not helping, getting us any closer to figuring out or having any chance of figuring out who the murderer is, the term "only murders in the building," like, this wasn't anyone in the building that did the murder. It was someone outside of the building that did the murder, which is just not satisfying. Like, the setup is just not there. And the motivations for the murderer are so undercooked, are so underwhelming that they would murder a person to do what they did. Does that make sense? Like, the murderer kills a woman to get a podcast, to get her own podcast, to get a story that she wants made by Tina Fey's character, but all her angst seems to be directed toward Tina Fey's character. Surely the only person she had motive to kill was Tina Fey's character, not fucking Bunny. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not satisfying on any level, I don't think.
Completely.
I think this is going to be another case of like the Upload season 2 review.
All right, let's end of the episode, guys. Welcome, thanks for coming.
Where I agree with everything you're saying, but I still enjoy the season. That, like, I think I'm at this point where this show for me is like a hangout sitcom. I love Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez's character so much, just hanging around them sure. is almost enough then for
call,
me at this
then
point.
Then call the show The Arconia and have it about the people who live there. Don't make it a murder mystery.
Yeah, I get that, but also, like, it didn't, like, I get everything you're saying, but it didn't make me go, I fucking hated this season. Like, it was like, okay. Like, I definitely found the season one finale more satisfying than this one, for sure.
Well, the thing that finale, even if the mystery wasn't that much better in season one, at least the connection directly to Steve Martin's character meant there was more stakes involved in, like, there was more character stakes and more for the characters to do around that revelation than there was with this one.
Yeah. But then that again, like, then the flash forward at the end, really.
Ah, fuck that. Back. That's the problem. They hook you with an idea, but they don't intend to make good with it. And also, that's the bit I'm not going to fall for that trick three times.
Oh, so that's it for you guys in the show?
No, I'll probably watch it. But I am not going to pretend, I'm not going in with any intention of getting invested in the murder side of things, even though it keeps telling me I should. Yeah. Because of the way it produces these episodes.
And is the new season going to be called Only Murders in A Building? Because it's not
no longer in
building
that building.
Anymore.
Yeah, exactly right. Unless maybe that big renovation they were doing was to create a theater on top of the Arconian. It's already destroyed its own premise. I will probably watch it because it is at half an hour once a week.
Yeah, Steve Martin has said this is it. Once this show's ended, he will never act again.
No, that's that.
Keep it going forever. That's I will eat my words.
That's not bad motivation. Realistically, the thing that keeps me watching the show more than anything is Martin Short. I think some of his line reads in this show are out of this world good. There was one he did, it was in the last episode, right? It was just before the cut to the title sequence. It was just saying, this episode doesn't really feel like a finale, does it? And it was just the way he said it. It was like, it was this close to breaking the fourth. It was leaning against the fourth wall, but didn't quite break it. It was just
at the fourth
wall. It was just right there. It was beautifully, beautifully delivered. Even the way he yelled when he found Teddy, I think it is, in the elevator, is like, you're my son's dad or whatever it is, and the way he yelled at him. I don't know. There was a real passion, and that character is by far the most interesting part of this show. I think he's great.
I have nothing bad to say about the people that are in this show. The characters and the actors are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish the premise they
wish it was written better.
Written better. Even the, like, the writing is funny.
The dialogue is funny.
The dialogue is funny.
What I mean is the writing is bad.
The story,
yeah.
I wish it lived up to its premise, yeah. Which it just doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. And even on a production value, I think the show looks beautiful. Yeah. I love the musical score. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
But you can't polish. That's, you know what I mean? Like a turd of writing.
No. That's the thing. It's not unenjoyable. It's just become frustrating, I think.
It has potential, but it's not reaching it.
That's always the thing that makes it worse, right? Is because there are so many strong elements, but it keeps stuffing up the one it keeps telling me I should invest in.
Yeah.
It just frustrates because it could be, it could be as good as some people seem to, as some people find it. Does it make sense? Yeah. But it just keeps tripping over its own fucking feet at the end of its season. It's very frustrating. And just like I keep thinking of the storylines that show up during this season that never really go as far as they should. There's like the stuff that's going on with Steve Martin. He's having flashbacks to when his dad was like leaving him outside the building. He was doing stuff. I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. Like Steve Martin's character's got some unresolved daddy issues. It doesn't really go any further with it in any meaningful way.
Hmm.
It's frustrating. It's frustrating. That's it. That's my thoughts on the Emergency of the Building, unless we happen to review it, which I'm pretty sure is not happening now. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode. Paul, where can people find you? What's happening with the Swapcast podcast?
So our latest episode, as I mentioned earlier, was Get Out, the Jordan Peele classic. And the next one, which I'll actually be recording tomorrow, is a film called Family Swap. Which I actually just watched today, and it's a French comedy from a couple of years ago. I think actually last year, about a family of five that all swap bodies with each other. So like the dad becomes the son and the mum becomes the daughter and all the hijinks that ensue there. And watching the film, I think it's going to be a very interesting episode because there's some fucked up shit that happens in that movie. So it'll be fun to...
No, they didn't do that, did they?
When are you guys going to review Wife Swap, the TV show?
Well, when the it becomes a reality. Body... when it becomes a body swap, which it never will.
You don't know.
But yeah, you can find us on anywhere you can find podcasts. You can find us, Spotify, wherever you're listening to this, you can find us. And then we're on all the social medias, but the best way to get in contact with us is our Instagram, which is also where you'll find shirtless pictures of all the men in our films.
Liam, where can people find shirtless pictures of you?
My OnlyFans is.
We all got to pay that rent, don't we?
If you want to find stuff that I do on the internet, you should look at my Twitch, which is my username is LiamDraws_. The underscore is the symbol, not the word. And also on Instagram, LiamGDraws, and also Twitter is LiamGordis. There you go. Also, there is a new podcast coming out that both of you have been on but haven't released yet. It's coming, I promise. Just you wait.
Thanks, guys. Thank you again for coming on. Another record-length episode of Off Topic, Hot Topic. Appreciate that. Well, I mean, we do these once every 2 or 3 months at the moment, so there's no wonder that they get blown out. We've got so much to talk about. But appreciate that. We'll be back with another Off Topic, Hot Topic in a couple of months, probably, and our next review episode of Hunting Seasons. If you haven't listened to it yet, go back and listen to our review episode of... What was the show that we just fucking reviewed?
A League of Their Own.
Thank you, A League of Their Own. It's been a long night.
We need to finish that show, Paul, so we can listen to the episode.
Go and listen to our review of League of Their Own, and the next upcoming review episode in a week or two will be Barry Season 3, which I've been holding off on watching until we got a chance to review it. I cannot wait.
Take it or leave it. I won't be listening.
We will see you next time. These guys aren't invited back onto the show ever again. Bye.
See you, bye.
Good night, everybody. Absolutely.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.